1926 Prohibition era Chicago, and a baby boy is born, a child of grace. Literally, his mother's name was Grace. He had a typical Midwestern religious upbringing, but perhaps magnified a little bit. Here's how he put it. We never smoked, swore, drank, danced, all the good stuff. Never hugged. Oh no, there was absolutely no hugging or kissing in my family. This lack of affection, by the way, shaped him into the man that he was becoming. His mother would later apologize for her inability to display any affection. He went on to college and met the girl that he had been saving himself for. That's right. He had saved himself. Before they could be married, he joined the military and returned. He served, and then he returned in 1945. They were together physically for the first time. She confessed days before they were to be married that she had had an affair while he was away. The young man was devastated. "I literally saved myself from my wife, but after we had sex, she told me she had had an affair." That was the most devastating moment in my life. Now, this dark time would shape his thoughts on morality, on religion, on God, and on women. The two still married in 1949, but the betrayal loomed over their marriage, and it played havoc on their union. Within 10 years, they had divorced. And by then, he had already established himself in the publishing industry with a mag that assaulted the values that he was raised with and the values that had led him down. The darkness of betrayal shaped Hugh Hefner, and he shaped the world. Welcome to Reality Church. We're on week 3 of a series that we're calling The Dark. My name is Lance Birch. I'm one of the pastors here. I want to welcome you if you're a guest. This is your first time. We're so glad that you made the choice to be here this morning. If you're watching online, you've clicked on this, we want to welcome you guys in. If at any point, any of you guys, even those of you who are watching online, have a question during the sermon, you can text those in. There will be instructions on the screen, but I really highly recommend that you download our app because you can ask longer questions on that. We've been talking for a few weeks. We took a break last week with Carl Medeiros, and that was amazing. But we've been talking about the dark and how all of us are going to go through a time in our lives when it's just dark. And we've defined it in a certain way because the dark is a very particular thing. It's when our suffering is combined with the silence of God. Now, we all go through suffering. We all go through times that are tough. I actually did a wedding last night, and it was an outdoor wedding. And if you guys come into contact with these little black bugs, I think they're calling them like pirate bugs. What is going on with these things? They are demons. So I had an iPad in one hand and a handheld mic in the other hand, and they were biting me, or whatever it is that they are doing. Their dark magic. I don't know what it is. It hurts. And then it would itch, and I'm like stuck, you know, just like this. And everybody else is like doing this. And I'm like, you know, I'm just feeling bitter. It was horrible. If you don't come up to, I'm a monster today. Don't come up to me because on the back of my neck and my face, there's all these, well, so anyway, I was suffering. But I didn't experience the silence of God. Far from it. I felt like I experienced the laughter of God during that time in my life. But the dark is a time when I'm suffering, it's not going right. And in Hugh Hefner's case, it's betrayal. And then the seeming silence of God. We get confused by those moments, especially when it's about betrayal, when somebody that we've loved and trusted ends up betraying us. And usually during those times, somebody is going to, at least if you know any believers, they're going to bring some scripture into your life. And no series on the dark would be complete without us looking at one of those that gets brought up more than anything when you suffer. Romans 8:28. So let's take a look at it. It says this. And we know, it's all us believers, we know this, that God causes everything to work together for the good. Now, I want you to notice the way this is worded. God doesn't necessarily cause every bad thing. But he causes every bad thing to work together. So he uses that thing to work together for what? For the good. Say that with me. One, two, three. Good. People use this all the time. You're going through a rough stretch. Hey, we know that God causes everything, even your really, really, really dark time, to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them. So in other words, if you're following Jesus and you're going through a rough stretch, we need to know something. God works all things for good. Now, question, what does good mean? In the context of hurting, in the context of suffering, what does good mean? What is God doing? What is he? How is he going to make this good? In the context of heartbreaking loss, when all hope is gone, what does good mean? Or perhaps most painful of all, what does good mean when you're betrayed, when somebody cheats on you, when somebody abuses you, when somebody that you've trusted tells what you've told them, and all of a sudden you feel completely alone? In the context of betrayal, which leads a lot of us to dark times, what does good mean? Because if we're not careful, even, you know, believers can get really twisted up on this idea of how life works. We don't say it, and it's not written in any of our documents, but a lot of us believe in karma. A lot of us in this room, we think, if I do good stuff follows. If I you know, pay my taxes and I don't cheat on my wife and all this, then I'll get the sweet parking spot, you know? Karma. Have you ever, if something good happens to you, have you ever heard anyone or had anyone say to you, you know what, you must be living right? And we nod our head, you know? Yeah, I guess so. Because, you know, I got I'm whatever it is. Sweet spark. Sweet parking spot. This is not as bad as last service when I said delicious snake. We'll get to that. And I'm really going to try not to say delicious snake. If we're not careful, we're going to believe that every time we do something good, something's going to get stocked up for us and something good's coming our way. We believe in, like, Christian karma, I guess, is what we would call it. And that leads to a lot of confusion. That idea seeps into our mind. I must be living right. Because what if we're doing the right stuff and something horrible happens or somebody betrays us? It can really baffle us when those who are closest to us cheat or abuse or lie or abandon. That betrayal leads to a special kind of darkness, the kind of darkness that has a name attached to it, the kind of darkness that we can blame and point to. Now, Jesus was familiar with this kind of darkness. A lot of us, when we think of betrayal and Jesus, one name comes to mind if you've been in church. Or maybe if you haven't been in church, one name comes to mind when you think of betrayal and Jesus. What's that name? Judas. Yeah, he betrayed him. Sold him out. But there was another one. A man who was one of his closest friends. Was with him during the hardest times. God had, you know, Jesus had asked him to come in close. And with about a couple of other guys, they hung out with Jesus more than anybody else. He was courageous. He was passionate. He was fearless. He said, I'm going to be there for you. He looked him in the eye. They sat knee to knee, eyeball to eyeball, and they said, I'm going to be there for you. You can count on me. And yet, that guy, his name was Peter, at the moment when it really, really came down to it, Peter betrayed his best friend. Peter betrayed him, turned his back on him. Here's the scene. Jesus gets betrayed by Judas, and then the trial starts out, and all of his disciples scatter. Now, Peter follows, but he follows at a distance, and he finds out where they're taken, and they're putting Jesus on trial. It's a mock trial. It's not, I mean, it's all filled with lies, and it's going to end up in his crucifixion. Still, it's a trial, and Peter is following. He's warming his hands next to a fire, and somebody notices him. He says, wait a minute, aren't you associated with him? Are you one of his disciples? Peter says, actually, it's a little girl, a little teenage girl. And he says, I don't know what you're talking about. And he kind of scoots around, and somebody else notices him. You speak like a Galilean. You sound like those guys that hung out with Jesus. Are you one of those guys? And he says, I don't know who you're talking about. I don't even know the guy. Finally, someone comes up to him and says, no, I saw you with him. You used to hang out with him. And he curses. And he says, I don't know the man, with a curse. And immediately this rooster crows and he's reminded of something. Jesus told him. When he said, Jesus, I'm going to be there for you. Jesus, I'm not going to allow anyone to hurt you. Jesus turns to him and says, Peter, before the rooster crows, you're going to deny me three times. And so when he remembered that moment, he said, I was your closest friend. And now I've betrayed you, not once, not twice, but three times. Here's what he did. He went out, ran away, and he wept bitterly. Have you ever wept bitterly? You know that kind of ugly cry that you hope nobody walks in on? You know, your shoulders are just weeping bitterly. About himself. How did I become this person? How did this happen? I've betrayed my best friend. I've betrayed the one that I said I was going to be there for. This is Peter's dark. He's right in the middle of it. He's lost hope. His self-confidence has been stripped away, and this guy is pretty confident. He thought he could do anything. This is the guy that was the water walker. He walked on water. This is the guy, when Jesus said, who do you guys say that I am? Peter says, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus turns to him and says, you know what? You're like a pebble, but on this rock, his name was Peter, means like a little rock. He says, on this Petra, I'm going to build my kingdom. On what you just said, Peter. So he had all sorts of confidence, but it was being stripped away moment by moment as he realized, I thought it was about me. I thought I had it all together. I thought I was going to be able to do it. And all of that's being stripped away. And he's weeping bitterly before God in the dark without hope. And the thing is, Jesus had told him this was going to happen. In fact, in Luke 22:31, he says, Peter, Satan has requested that you be delivered into his hands to be sifted like wheat. He's gonna like do his work on you. He's gonna do what he does best. He's gonna sift you like wheat. You're gonna be stripped away. And we've given him, you know, I've given him permission. He's gonna do that. But I've prayed for you, Simon, that's Peter. I've prayed for you, Peter, that your faith should not fail. And then he goes on in verse 32. So when you have repented and turned to me again, so after you do all this bad stuff, after you betray me three times, after you tell everybody you don't know me, I've prayed for you, so you're going to repent. So after you've done that, here's what I want you to do, Peter. Strengthen your brothers. Because some of them think it's about them. Some of them have confidence in themselves. And after it's stripped away from you and you finally get it, I want you to use the way that I've shaped you to shape others. Jesus told him it was going to happen. He even hinted at the reason that it was going to happen because he needed to be a different kind of Peter. Not the kind of Peter that was always, he was the boy with the foot-shaped mouth. He was always shooting off. He was always saying stuff. And Jesus said, you need to be a different kind of Peter. A Peter who's not just talking about being fearless, but who can actually be fearless. So this moment of darkness, even when it was about betrayal, shaped Peter. And it wasn't karma. It wasn't you did bad stuff, now bad stuff is going to happen to you. No, instead, in the dark, what Peter found was something much better than karma. He found grace. It's a word that we use sometimes, but I don't know that we get it. In the Old Testament, we said that it's translated from hesed, meaning the unfailing love of God. What hesed means is that I keep breaking the commitment, the covenant, and he keeps keeping the covenant. That's who God is. He gives me everything when I deserve nothing. Peter didn't deserve anything, but he found, instead of karma, he found grace. And the grace that Peter was shown shaped him into who he was becoming. And he, in turn, shaped others. And this is the truth. God uses the dark to shape you and your response to shape others. I know in the first week we said it's not bad to ask why. Because if why is what the question that resides in your heart, then ask it. But today we're going to try to move from why to how are you going to use this? What's going on here? What is the purpose of this? And we're not going to have all those questions answered, but I think one of the hints that God gives us all through Scripture is that I'm using it. I know it's painful, and I know it's betrayal, and I know it's something that you don't want to go through, and really, in my perfect will, I don't want you to go through, but I'm going to use it to shape you into the person that you need to be. So God's going to use it. Uses the dark to shape you and your response to shape others. Our relationship to times of darkness changes the moment we believe in Jesus. Our relationship to the darkness changes the moment we say Jesus is who he says he is. The way we feel about the dark switches the moment we say there's a God who has all this and I don't have to worry about it. It's not about me, it's about him. There's a switch that happens there. We can actually celebrate the dark. And I know that sounds crazy. And maybe we can't do it in the moment, but we can in the rearview mirror. We can say, I see what that did for me. We can celebrate the dark because we know what it does. Depending on our response, it shapes us to look a little bit more like Christ. Paul said this. Paul was this guy who started out as persecuting the church, but then he became a believer in Jesus Christ, and he started planting churches. There was a lot of opposition. In fact, Paul faced so much opposition that at one point people threw rocks at him until they thought he was dead and they just left him there. So it was like Paul had been through it. In fact, in his letter to a church in Corinth, he said, we don't want you to be ignorant of all the trouble we've had. We've had plenty of it. And he says, we were crushed, we were overwhelmed beyond our ability to endure, and we thought we'd never live through it. In fact, more than that, we expected to die. We were at that point when we thought, this is it. And maybe you've never been there. I've had moments in my life where I thought, this is it. I hope it was a good one, because this is it. I was in a car accident one time where I just fully believed, so these are my last thoughts before I check out. Well, Paul was saying, this is it. I expect to die. But then in verse 9, he says, as a result, because all of our hope was gone, we stopped relying on ourselves and learned to rely only on God who raises the dead. Now, you may think that you rely on God right now, You may think that you're in a state of relying on, and you might be, I don't know. But typically for me, I don't really learn how to rely on God until God is literally the only thing I have. I don't learn that pattern of saying, God, I'm going to go to you and you only until I go through dark times where he shapes my heart and I don't have anything else. And I've been through those times. And what Paul is saying is, because of that, I mean, it was bad stuff. People were betraying us. People were lying about us. People were abusing us. But it was shaping me into the person that I needed to be. We learn to rely on God in a different level in the dark. And God redeems. It means he makes it valuable. Our pain. And he uses it to shape us. And it's not about karma. It's not about if I do good stuff's going to happen. Or if I do bad stuff's going to happen. Yeah, there's a principle in Scripture of planting seeds and you reap what you sow. But there's nothing in the Bible about if I stack up good stuff, unrelated good stuff is going to happen to me. So planting and sowing, planting and reaping is about direct consequences of my behavior are going to happen. If I cheat on my taxes, I might get audited. Those sorts of things. But karma is about this unrelated sort of universe smiling on me. If I do good stuff, then I'm going to get, I'm going to win the lottery or everything's going to go right for me. That doesn't exist. And if we think it, then we're really confused by life. Instead, we find something much better than karma. We find grace, meaning we don't get what we deserve. Grace, when the person from whom I have the right to expect nothing instead gives me everything, that's what we find, even in the dark. We encounter, even though we don't deserve it, a God who can forgive us. That's what Peter found. See, Peter's life wasn't fully formed until after he had betrayed Jesus, he went out fishing, and he had kind of, that relationship was kind of strained. And the resurrected body of Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, was walking along the shore, and Peter was fishing. And he said, finally Peter realized, that's Jesus, resurrected. That's his body. And he actually ate fish with them. So Jesus had a physical body. And he took a walk with Peter and he said, Peter, do you love me? And Peter said, you know I love you. And they continued walking a little bit further. And Jesus turned and said, Peter, do you love me? He said, yeah, Jesus, you know I love you. And he asked him the third time, Peter, do you love me more than these? And some people say that he was pointing, you know, to the other disciples, or we don't really know. It was kind of vague, but whatever it was, it broke Peter's heart. And he said, Father, Jesus, you know I love you. You know I do. And every time Jesus would say, feed my sheep, feed my lambs, feed my sheep. What he was saying is Peter, by the way, Peter realized he was asking him three times. And how many times did Peter betray him? Three times. It was shaping him into the man he was going to become. It was dark. It was painful. Yeah, absolutely. But it shaped him into a new kind of Peter. How many of you guys think that you're just static? You're just the way you are. That's the way you're going to be. What if God says, no, 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 you can be better. And maybe the dark is going to get you there. So the kind of good that Romans 8 is talking about has got to be different than maybe what we think when we think of good. Maybe the good that Romans 8 is talking about, God is going to use everything to work together for our good. The good of Romans 8 is so good that it's the eternal kind of good, the forever kind of good, not the good of an ice cream cone or a delicious steak. Yes! Not the good of getting a word right in a sermon. It's not like getting that sweet parking spot or receiving an unexpected check in the mail. It's not the good of a beautiful sunset or even a mountain vista. Guys, it's not even the good of a long, healthy marriage or a loyal friend. Not the good of everything turning out okay, the cancer going into remission, the marriage restored. No, this is the kind of good that goes on without end, the never-ending good. You're an eternal being, and anything that God does in you character-wise, anything that he shapes you in, is going to last forever. And it's going to not only shape you, it's going to shape everybody that you come into contact with. We should, as Reality Church, have a group of people that are being molded by God, who are going out into a community and living differently because of it. And the lab or the kiln or the anvil that God uses to shape us is the dark. And in the middle of that, we find the good that Hesed brings. We find the good that this Hebrew word, when the person from whom I have the right to expect nothing gives me everything. And that word Hesed from the Hebrew is translated over into the New Testament. Is grace. We find it. You know, almost 20 years exactly after Hugh Hefner was born, another baby was born. Raised by an abusive father in a strict environment, he became disinterested in religion and embraced atheism. The abuse of his dad was violent and unpredictable, and at the age of 17, the young man lost all hope. He gathered some poison packets from his science lab at school and went home and poured packet after packet into a cup of water. He went into the bathroom and locked the door, and the frothing liquid, he said, was kind of alarming, but he still turned it up and drank it almost all in one gulp. The saltiness of the mixture caused him almost immediately to start throwing up, and he began to cry out because he was choking, and the servant in the house broke down the bathroom door, and that's all he remembers. He was found himself in the hospital where they monitored him for organ damage, and he awoke with, you know, all sorts of needles in his arms, and he woke to his mother's sobs, and he saw his father in the room, in the hospital room, and he thought, I know what you're thinking. You hadn't brought enough shame on our family. You had to do this too. And in his own mind, he was thinking, you know what? I don't know how to live. I don't even know how to die. Completely given up hope. The doctors, too, also had kind of given up hope on him. They had believed that he had done so much internal damage that he wasn't going to be able to survive. A man named Fred David from Youth for Christ walked into the room. And he had a Bible with him. He said, could I give the Bible to this young man? She said, no, could you read it? So he turned to John 14 and they read it out loud. His mother actually read it. And it was the conversation between Jesus and a doubter named Thomas. And Jesus said, look, if since I live, you'll live. He also said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And this young man who heard it cried out in his soul. He said, Jesus, if you're real, get me out of here. I will pursue you with the rest of my life. And his name was Ravi Zacharias. He would go on to become an internationally known apologist and evangelist, known around the world. His knowledge of Eastern culture, because he's from India, has enabled him to speak the truth of Jesus to those who he would probably be unable to reach. God used the dark to shape Ravi, and his response to shape the world. His international ministry of apologetics and evangelism. If you don't know what apologetics is, we're not apologizing for being Christians. It's actually giving the reasons for what we believe. And when I watch him, I'll confess I'm a little bit of a Ravi Zacharias fanboy. I watch his videos on YouTube. But when I do watch him, what I get from him is an approachable, soft heart. And when I grew up, I was afraid of a lot of preachers. They just seemed harsh to me, like ready to hop on whatever I'm doing wrong and make me feel guilty. And what I get from Ravi is this warm, winsome spirit that I want to approach. And I think it was shaped almost impossibly, because if you know someone who's been abused, they normally have a hard heart. I think almost impossibly, God used the dark to shape Ravi and his response to shape the world. The dark will happen. Now, either the dark is going to shape you or God will shape you in the dark. The dark is temporary, but God is using it to bring about the good, the eternal, forever good, the changing of your heart so that you can go out and help others. Your response, guys, is going to shape the world. No matter what you're going through, I want to help you move from why to how are you going to use this. So we want to do that. But I know that if we talk about this stuff, there's probably some questions that may come up in your mind, and I want to try to tackle those as we can. Also, if you're watching online, you have the ability to text in a question. Just let your host know, and we will get to those as well. How do we answer the question of why God allows the really bad dark to happen? Murder, rape, child abuse. Well, we don't answer it flippantly, that's for one thing. It's a confusing question. The problem of evil is a very, very baffling question. Because what people will say is either if God is all-powerful and he's all-loving, then explain this. If this happens, then either God doesn't love us or he's not all-powerful. Because if he could stop it, he would. I think there's a third option. And I think that it's a baffling and mysterious option. I think it's a holy option, but it is this. God, who doesn't think like us, and who can redeem even the ugliest things, and who can make sad things come untrue, has a purpose for allowing this in my life, or this in that person's life. And that one day, at the restoration of all things, he's going to do more than just explain what happened, because that won't work. He's going to make it as if it's more beautiful for having happened. And I know, guys, in our finite minds, there's no way that we could figure that out. But if we could, we'd be God, and then the world would be a disaster. There are some unanswered questions, but I would say this about the problem of evil. It's actually a bigger problem for atheists. It's actually a bigger problem for people who don't believe in God. Because how can we define evil without God? How can we define evil without knowing that there's something inside of us that says, that's not right. That ought not be that way. Really? What? Ought? How does evolution get us to ought? So the fact that we can look at the world and say, that's injustice. That's ugly. That's awful. Guys, there is the fingerprint of God on you. there's the image of God on you. You are an image bearer. That's why people fight for the earth and they hug trees. That's why people, you know, go out in boats and try to save the whales. Whether they know it or not, they might even say, I'm a pagan. They have the image of God on them and they're saying, this looks like injustice to me and I want to solve it. So I believe that the question is unanswerable. And in that gap, we say, I'm going to trust in the hesed of God. When I'm going to die with more question marks than exclamation points, I just know it, but I'm going to trust in the God who says he's going to restore all things. So one more thing about suffering. It's not as if Jesus views our suffering passively. He entered into it. It's not as if Jesus considers our suffering an academic course. We're not lab experiments and him watching us. He entered into our suffering and suffered more than any human ever has. Both on the cross physically, but also on the cross spiritually and emotionally. No one has sunk to a deeper low than Christ himself. So this is an academic. God does not just view us and pity us. He enters into the scene and experiences everything to the maximum degree. And so I think that that also helps us answer the problem. He hates it, he died for it, and one day he'll redeem it. So hope that helps. You say, trust God's character, but he is just allowing me to sit in darkness. How do I trust that? I just feel pushed away. This is the definition of the dark. That's it. What I would say is don't do this in isolation. I can imagine, and that I do want to encourage you that you don't find anybody in the Old Testament, not Moses, not Abraham, not Jacob, not Ruth, not any character in the Old Testament that didn't go through a dark time. There's just example after example. Now, in the middle of that darkness, they didn't know when it was going to end, and they didn't know what it was about. So what I'm asking you to do, in fact, read Psalm 13. If this is you, I want you to read Psalm 13, which is basically crying out to God and saying, how long, God? Stop ignoring me. Turn your face to me. Because even at this point, I notice that you say, I just feel pushed away. Even at this point, you believe in God, because who else would be pushing you away? So even in your moment of despair, I want you to cry out to God. Read Psalm 13, go all the way through it. Because in the Psalm 13, there's this word that's just like, but I will trust in your unfailing love. Another helpful thing to do is remember, what has God done in your life previous? Maybe it's just a sunset. Maybe it's just a moment when you felt like he was there. Remember those moments. Maybe it's the moment you believed in Jesus and now you're in a dark time. Also, don't do this in isolation. Hopefully you're in a life group. If you're not, get a group of friends around you who love you, or at least one that you can be totally and completely honest with. Maybe watch weeks 1 through 1 and 2 so you can learn about lament. It's a good thing. Give to God what's in your heart. It's worship. Even if it's wrong, frankly, it's worship. Even if you're saying things that aren't true, it's worship. It's you bringing what's at your gut level to God and saying, what about this? And it's actually an expression of faith. I told you guys one time that the saddest video I ever saw was a Ukrainian orphanage where the babies weren't crying. And the reason is because something had happened inside of their brains where that mechanism quit because nobody ever came and helped them. Don't get there. Continue to cry out, because every time you cry out, even if you're a little bitter and cynical, you're still crying out, and that's an expression of faith that there is someone to hear you. So I'd love to talk with you more about that if you want to. So, yep. After divorcing someone that had multiple affairs, how do you forgive that person when they are not sorry and felt justified in having multiple affairs? First of all, I can't imagine the pain of what you went through, whoever that is. Can't imagine that. But what I would say is this, we need to really nail down what forgiveness means. Because I get the feeling that in popular culture, forgiveness takes on a meaning which makes it impossible for any human to do for another human. It's like we think that forgiveness is forgetting. I was told that one time. Forgiveness is, if you didn't forget it, then you haven't forgiven them. That's, come on, that's completely bogus. That is nowhere in the Bible. The only one who's capable of that is God, and he doesn't even do it. He uses it as a metaphor. It's like, I will remember your sins no more. That's a conscious choice that he makes. But guys, you're not gonna forget it. The other thing that people think it is like, no, it wasn't a big deal. It's no longer a big deal to me, what you did. That's bogus too. It was a huge deal. It was life-shattering. It's not saying it didn't hurt or that it wasn't wrong. Forgiveness it's transactional. It's saying to someone, I used to want you to pay this debt, and now I don't. It still hurts. If somebody extorts 20 grand from me, and I forgive the debt, what does that mean? Does it mean it wasn't a big deal? Does it mean it didn't hurt? Does it mean, by the way, that I will trust them with the next 20 grand? No, it doesn't. And so forgiveness doesn't mean I'm going to enter into another trust relationship with you. Forgiveness doesn't mean that we're going to be buds. Forgiveness means I'm not going to extract payment from you anymore for what you did, because the payment for all of sin was paid by Jesus Christ. And guess what? I'm a sinner too. I've been hurt. I've also hurt people, maybe not to that degree, but I don't expect payment from you anymore. And that's it. And that's a spiritual exercise. I wish I could tell you that's a one-time deal, but not for me. For me, sometimes that's a moment-by-moment deal where I have to remind myself, no, I'm not trying to get payment from them. I'm not going to be happy when their life goes south. I don't need them to pay me back, because if I got everything that was coming to me, it would be pretty horrific. I don't want karma for them. I want grace for them and for me. I want to live in a world of grace rather than karma. So I hope that helps, but this is going to be a journey and not a, hey, I'm going to come down here and pray and it's going to be over. It's going to be a journey for you. It's going to be a daily thing for you. But remember, being unforgiving, bitterness like that, it turns to bitterness, and bitterness is like peeing in your wetsuit. It really only affects you. You know? It does. So you need to maybe get beyond that to another way of looking at things. Like, I don't need them to pay me anymore. So what's next? What if the dark lasts the rest of our lives? If you're a believer, that's impossible. Unless you're saying that your physical life is all there is. I mean, I honestly think, if I live 85, 90 years, it's very important. It shaped who I was, but that's going to be a blip for me. The dark will not last the rest of your life. You must be talking about your physical life, so I'll accept that as the question. It has before for other people. Read Hebrews 11. There were people in serious suffering, and they hoped for Jesus to come and rescue them, and they hoped for this, and they had hope in that. And they didn't realize that hope on this side. The dark is always temporary, but you are not temporary. And so if somebody enters into a dark place, and guys, sometimes people succumb to the hopelessness, even believers, and they exit too quick. So what if the dark lasts your whole life? I think that would be a rare occurrence, because I think God wants to shape you for usefulness on this side. And so I think that would be a rare occurrence, but it's possible. God can do whatever he wants to do. What I would say is this: God will redeem it through eternity. He will redeem everything. And so if that's you and you think this is just going to stretch out till I die, I think I would tell you probably not. Probably not. And maybe this is the first day when you start to see the light, that you're coming out of the dark. But so probably not, but it could. And if it does, the party that God's going to throw forever in eternity is going to be that much happier for you. You're going to exit this world in the same way we ought to think about this world. Not much. It was nice, but not that great. And I long for something, I long for what God wanted this world to be. at the very beginning. And he will make it that way. He'll redeem every broken heart. He'll wipe away every tear if that happens. But I doubt that it will. So, next. Why does one man get to have one proper response, which leads to redemption, and another man not get to have the right response, which leads to death? I wonder if you're talking about Hugh Hefner and Ravi in this case. Actually, I think people choose their response. I really do. And I guess I would say that to you right now. All of us are choosing our response. I know that you can't choose what happens to you, but I don't consider it, I get to have the right response to this, or I didn't. I actually believe that you right now, no matter what kind of darkness you're going through, have the choice to trust, to either trust in the unfailing love of God or not. In the one case, God allowing suffering into your life can lead to out-and-out rebellion if you let the dark shape you. Or God can shape you in the dark, which leads to a total different deal. So I guess we're all at a fork in the road when we hit dark times. But I would say it's your choice. We're going to give you guys a chance. We don't do this very often, but we've been doing a little bit with the dark. We're going to give you guys a chance to move from why to how are you going to use this. Actually, I had someone come down and pray during the first service. She said, I just want to celebrate God and how he's shaping me in the dark. And I heard that prayer. It was really cool. So we're going to have some people down front here. They're going to sing Reckless Love. And I'm going to invite you guys to just come down and pray and try to move from why, which is a good question, to how are you using this to shape me, and I'm going to trust in you. It's going to be really difficult for people to do that without us all standing. So if you guys would all stand with me during this song, and I invite you to come and just pray with those who are down front here.